Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Saturday Morning Anime Podcast, where we leave the analysis to the professionals. I'm Trey, your ska band provocateur.
And I'm Xavier, your MC for tonight's Beyblade tournament.
All right. Now, before we get started tonight, or this morning, I suppose, let me remind you that this show is not intended for kids, even if our favorite shows are totally intended for kids.
So today we're doing a retread, which I guess is thematic since the last episode was recraps. We're going to be doing anime openings again, but instead of our usual where we pick five anime openings that mean a particular thing to us or are very special, we're doing the dubbed edition. No Japan language here. Because they don't get enough love. Dub openings were some of the first ways a lot of people experienced anime openings. And whether you like it or not, that's like 2 minutes worth of time where you're just staring at the screen. And America, specifically 4Kids as a production company, had a very particular way of doing anime openings that I think in some cases turned out really, really good. Some cases turned really, really bad. But what all of them were memorable and designed to be like earworms.
Oh, absolutely. I think the biggest testament to this is one that we'll talk about at the very end. Minor spoiler. I'm willing to bet that even people you know that couldn't tell you the name of a Pokemon other than Pikachu know them some of the lyrics to the Pokemon English theme song for like the original series of Pokemon. It just sticks around.
Yeah, and openings, and we didn't really talk about this the first time we did openings, but openings themselves are a marketing strategy, essentially, because it's something that you can sort of associate with the series. But the way in which marketing is done in the West and Japan, often very different. And you don't get things often like actual charting artists singing anime openings, because that's not the way we're selling the anime. A lot of times they're selling the anime through its plot, like just its plot, or to like sell toys.
Yeah. And this sort of difference between Japan and America results in a lot of really weird pieces of music, some of which I think are fantastic, some of which I think are terrible, but they're like made in-house by the dub team or someone that the dub team has hired. And they have such a distinct like feel about them. And anyone who watches like a lot of these will realize it, right? There's this real fascination with like repeating the name of the series, and there's oftentimes they'll have entirely different visuals cut out that are like replacing the original visuals with just like edited footage from the series itself. And there's just sort of this weird 4Kids era anime dub opening like feel, you know?
Yeah, and this is a largely extinct practice. Like, to get an English version of most anime that exists, you have to essentially rely on the YouTube dubbing community now. So, like, this is a much smaller pool of openings to pull from than in our past episode.
Which I think will make it a lot of fun, but also might make it a little bit easier for the viewers to keep up, or listeners, I suppose, because at least three of my five are like aggressively iconic, and the other two were also in similar 4Kids style blocks to the rest of these series. And if the average like listening age of this podcast is to tell you anything, it's all people our age to maybe a bit older, with minor exceptions. So a lot of people may be able to like remember this more mainstream stuff. So I'm really excited to see like the reception to this episode, I guess.
I make no guarantee about the mainstream quality of the songs that I've picked at all. Though I will say, lesson from last time that I'm going to do this time. I really would love to play like snippets of all of these songs before or after we talk about them, but copyright is weird for podcasting. So instead I'm going to put links to the songs in the description of this video. So if you don't normally check the description, not video, podcast, I do that all the time. If you don't normally read the description, read it this time because it has the links to all of these songs.
Yeah. I recommend that whenever we go back and forth, we've each picked five, as is tradition at this point. Right when we say, hey, we're talking about blank, go and give that opening a listen or a watch so you can have the same context that we have, or at least a little bit more context. If you've never seen the series, like, I'd rather you at least see the opening so you're not just sitting here listening to us talk for 5 to 10 minutes about a piece of music or video that you have no experience with. That'll probably make the experience a much better listen all around.
Also, no guarantees, but if I can find them, I might be able to just wrap them into a playlist. And if that's the case, I'll just make it one big link to the playlist, but we'll see.
Oh, hell yeah. That would make it even easier. But on that note, we can sit here and talk about like the overarching English anime stuff as much as we want, but I think you should probably just go ahead and say your first one. I'm excited.
Yeah, so the first one is a series in my personal life that I talk about a lot, but I realize not as many people have as vivid memories of this series as I do. And personally, I hate myself for remembering most of the plot details of the show. The English opening to Fighting Foodons. So the English opening to Fighting Foodons is a remix of Orpheus in the Underworld. So if you're a fan of classic music, they took the Orpheus in the Underworld like instrumentation and they slapped essentially the plot of the show over the entire thing with some wacky visuals. So quick synopsis of Fighting Foodons in 5 minutes or less. It's a show about rebel chefs fighting against what they call the Glutton Empire, and they use like old school Hanafuda cards to bring food to life into sometimes humanoid personages that in a Pokemon-esque way can only say their name. And the better you are at cooking, the better your food on, as it were. And they fight in like tournaments on for the freedom of the culinary world. Original Food Wars.
If this happens to sound like a fever dream, one, I don't think you're wrong for thinking that. Two, Xavier loves this show to death and will often ask a room of like full of people, at least prior to COVID things. Now we social distance and we do our best to stay in very small groups. But the amount of times I've heard him look at a room of like maybe 10 to 20 people and go, hey, do any of you remember Fighting Foodons, or am I literally imagining things? Dozens of times, actually dozens. He's asked hundreds of people, and I've never heard someone say, yes, I've seen that show before.
In fact, maybe the only proof I have that Fighting Foodons exists is the fact that the opening is on YouTube. So last time we did a really detailed like lyrics analysis of all the other songs.
Oh, we're doing it again. Now pull up those Fighting Foodons lyrics.
No, we are, but I don't need to. This is going to be a theme of this episode. And one of the things I find amazing about English dub openings, and part of it is just like mastery of the language, right? Let me make that very clear. I don't need to pull up any of these lyrics because they have stuck with me through all of these years of my life. So Fighting Foodons, as it goes through the instrumentation for Orpheus in the Underworld, literally starts off, Fighting Foodons, you will not believe your eyes. Fighting Foodons, I did forget.
Now you look like an asshole. No.
It happens. It's okay. Mostly the beginning, but I've forgotten. Anyway, these monsters once were edible. Now there's something regrettable. Now take a load off and you can look. These monsters that you can cook. And it's just...
It's so good.
And as far as visuals, right, it's not a pretty show. There's no like Sakuga moments in Fighting Foodons. It's just them showing off the different foodons and literally spoiling parts of the plots and like the power-up system. Like, it depends on what toppings you add is one of the lyrics. And they have a system where you can take an existing foodon, and there are these things called power toppings So like the main character's favorite one to use is iceberg lettuce. And he'll just hold up a head of iceberg lettuce and be like, yo, Fried Ricer, who's the Pikachu of the series, essentially. you're faster now because I added that iceberg lettuce, which doesn't make sense. Don't put iceberg lettuce in your fried rice.
No, you put iceberg lettuce all over your fried rice. And as we failed to mention in our power scaling episode, you break all tier lists by eating heads of iceberg lettuce to buff your speed stat through the roof.
And they really go like full in on the food theme, right? So like my favorite two lyrics from the entire song are pizza will attack with gooey cheese.
As it does.
Followed by an image of a cheese pizza Grim Reaper emitting cheese from his scythe and spreading it all over the main characters. And a line that says, what will win, Italian or Chinese? If anything's left over, you can't breathe. And the images that follow these lyrics are Fried Ricer, who is literally a plate of fried rice on a human body, fighting a plate of spaghetti on a human body called Spaghetti About It.
All right.
And this image is cut in by a burrito wearing a sombrero with a guitar singing the if anything's left over you can't breathe. It's hilarious.
I want to remind our audience that anime is a very serious business, not meant for any comedic effect, and all of this is actually a metaphor for imperialism or something.
No, I don't think it is. In fact, this is on the level of like G Gundam. Tequila Gundam, like that is how bad this show is.
That's also a metaphor for imperialism, but actually there's actual imperialism in G Gundam. I don't know about Finding Futons. I haven't seen it. I've only watched the song.
That's fair. So that is my review. That is my recommendation to watch the Fighting Futons English opening for comparison. And I'll be doing this with my picks. Don't know what you're going to do with yours. The Japanese opening does not choose to be this campy about it and is actually somewhat serious, which is kind of a theme you'll see following through, right? So just a little note, but this is particularly silly, even for this show, which is already silly.
Wow. Shout out to totally blanking on words I was going to say. Kids, this is why we do things in one take, because it's funny to leave in mistakes like this. Are you done with Fighting Futons?
I am done with Fighting Futons, unless you want to tell people about my obsession with Fighting Futons.
Okay, I was going to ask, is that one that's on your mouth or no?
No, I only have one thing on my mouth.
Is it Battle Beat 'em on?
Yeah.
It's a 10, right?
Yeah, it's a 10.
Okay, good. Have you thought about putting Fighting Futons on your mouth?
Yes.
Okay. That should be a recommendation enough. My first series is one that is near and dear to the heart of basically all of the human beings, which is to say the original Yu-Gi-Oh! Opening, which, unlike you, I need not look up the lyrics. And I'm going to start with the lyrics because I think it's a good place to start for the Yu-Gi-Oh! Opening. It's your move, but shouted really loud, interspliced by shouting Yu-Gi-Oh! Really loud. And then the really iconic, it's time to duel. And then in the background at one point, it shouts, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is king of games. Those are all of the lyrics. Now, if you hadn't figured it out, this is actually a sonnet. And it's... No. the original Yu-Gi-Oh! Opening, if you watch it at like the start of an episode, it doesn't have... always like this long monologue, but it does this thing, as most of these series do, where it likes to explain the plot in its opening. So the first like 45 seconds are talking about like the Egyptian history behind the game of duel monsters and how it's been like 5,000 years since the pharaoh died and now he's returned inside the millennium puzzle and you can like soul bond with this fucking 12-year-old. And then the beat kicks in and the Yu-Gi-Oh! Original opening English beat is hard as fuck. I'm not a music person, so I'm not going to try and like mimic what it sounds like, but I can hear every note of it in my head, interspliced with like those your moves. It's just fantastic. This is just a good piece of music. And the visuals like aren't exactly something to write home about, because like a lot of these openings, it's just sort of stuff cut from the show. But it's stuff cut from the show edited together really well, and you get to see a bunch of the characters, obviously, right? You get to see your Joey Wheelers, your Yugi Motos. You get to see a bunch of specific cards, like the Egyptian God cards, or Dark Magician, or the Blue Eyes White Dragon, right? And I didn't really pick this one because I think it's like one of the best English OPs, or even because I think it accurately represents what a majority of these OPs are about, but because this, to me, just feels so damn Yu-Gi-Oh! And is the one, it's the one that comes to mind when I think of English anime, like dub OPs, above all else. Even above something like Pokemon, my brain immediately goes to Yu-Gi-Oh! Which might be because of my like biased Yu-Gi-Oh! Childhood, but that's me.
When you're talking about the beat drop, so kind of talking, I guess, about the music of the song itself. So like there's this beginning part where they try to like set some Egyptian themes through like flute playing and a string instrument that I'm not super familiar with. And then you're talking about like the record scratch where they're like, okay, we're doing what everything else did in the 90s, which is putting weird rock music there.
Yes, specifically at the point where the visuals show like the two different shadows of Yugi, and one of them is Yugi and one of them is like Yami Yugi, you know? And yeah. Then like right there and right after that, like the record scratch happens as that shadow like bends apart and then kicks into gear with this really weird, like bombastic, not like rock guitar track, but just sort of this really hard hitting. I guess I'd call it
rock. It's a horn section.
It is a horn section, but it feels very rock. It's not as rock as like you're listening to the epic drum kicks of the Shaman King OP, which we'll get to. And it doesn't even feel like a lot of the rock that's really guitar heavy or is super lyric heavy about the themes of the show, or is even like ska, when we'll get to that too. It doesn't feel like the rest of the openings, and that might be why I like it so much. Because it's, to me, it's the one that's stuck in my head the longest.
Yeah, it holds a kind of particular place because there are almost no lyrics and it is almost entirely instrumental. But a note about the lyrics that I later came to appreciate. So you know how it says Yu-Gi-Oh! Is the king of games?
Yeah.
If you just translate Yu-Gi-Oh! Like directly,
yeah,
it's a way of saying king of games. It is... Yugi Moto.
Oh god. Yeah. Oh my god.
Also, something I find interesting about the 4Kids dub of Yu-Gi-Oh! Is in the original, the characters are named Yugi and his best friend, who's a blonde, strangely from Brooklyn in the middle of Japan, is named Joey in the English dub and Jinochi in the original, like the Japanese. Yeah. This is done on purpose, because if you put the beginnings of those two names together, you get Yujo, and Yujo means friendship, and aww, they make reference to this in the show with a card called Yujo Friendship. It literally says friendship, friendship. Look, also can mean like a specific type of prostitute, but don't worry about that.
No, that's what it's actually about. But friendship, obviously a big theme of Yu-Gi-Oh! Another thing that I just wanted to hint, like to point out, is that when Yugi like starts dueling and Millennium Puzzles out and becomes like the Pharaoh version of Yugi, you know, the voice changes. It is a deeper, like more confident adult sounding voice. That is the voice that is doing all of the, it's time to do, 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 duel. And then like the, your move is like a different voice happening in the background, but they got the voice actor for Yugi, for Yami Yugi or Pharaoh Yugi specifically, to do like the really iconic, like when Yugi is slamming the car down and shouting about dueling moment, which I just like.
Another thing I find interesting about this OP is you would think that because Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a card game, or at least the anime is mainly about the card game, but this would be a very like toy commercial-ish Transformers, look at all this cool shit anime OP. But like it doesn't tell you anything about the game, and even the visuals, like except for like a few still shots of them holding cards, don't look like they're playing a card game.
No, for the most part, it feels it just sort of feels like a showcase of the things you're going to see in the show, which, like, when they're playing the card game, you obviously see the cards a lot, you know? But for the most part, you're supposed to see things like the giant blue eyes white dragon that's going to, like, laser beam you, or Exodia, or the Egyptian god cards in their, like, out of card form when they're actually these gods, right? And these are all in there, not the card game, which I do appreciate, because I do think, as compared to other shows, original Yu-Gi-Oh! Does a better job of telling a story and doesn't get as bogged down in attempting to sell things. Obviously, when they tried, like, the dice monster shit, you know, like, they tried for, like, a little bit, and it sucked really bad and was really, really awful, and they stopped it after, like, 4 episodes. But for the most part, it feels like they weren't just trying to hard shill something, even if they took a really hard departure from what the manga is like, and I just kind of appreciate that. Like, we'll get around to Yu-Gi-Oh! Eventually. We're going to do a whole episode about that Yu-Gi-Oh! Shit. Don't even worry about it. But I just like the opening a lot. It had to be first for me because it's the one that came to mind immediately.
Yeah, and I think the opening actually reflects a lot of sort of the adaptation philosophy of the show, in that they just sort of changed Yu-Gi-Oh! Into something that would look cool to kids and didn't want to focus on the game aspect, which is why it was cut down to like 1 or 2 games, when the manga was like a different game almost every chapter.
Yeah, the manga was a whole death game thing. And then they just were like, but what if we just did this cool card game, had cool characters, had cool card designs, went to town with some story? And you're like, yeah, I can get behind that. And that's just kind of how this opening feels. It feels like they just kind of want you to get ready to duel. As the lyrics say, it is now time to duel. You are now ready to watch Yu-Gi-Oh! You are going to watch a duel, you know?
Yeah, and part of me wants to say that that's because it's not a death game anymore.
Yeah.
So, like, if it was still a death game, they would have a plot to explain to you. But as of how they changed it, now it's just about dueling.
Yeah, and sometimes the dueling becomes a game to the death. Haha, epic reference to the Shadow Realm or something. But for the most part, it's kind of toned down a lot and feels more like Pokemon's edgy card game cousin, which I'm fine with.
Yeah, same. You can only have so many chokers before you're not edgy.
There's so many. That being said, I do love all the character designs in Yu-Gi-Oh! We'll get to that too. But that's it. I just like gushing about Yu-Gi-Oh! Even though I don't actually have that much to say about that compared to the other openings here.
All right, so the next one that I'm going to go with is actually something that breaks a convention that I mentioned in the beginning, which is the Rave Master OP in English.
I'm ready.
So Rave Master, which was made by Hiro Mashima, the same guy who makes Fairy Tail and Eden Zero, and a couple other things. Dude's really good at his job, even if he does reuse the same character designs over and over again. Is done by Real Big Fish.
Yeah, we're just going to let that one sit there for a second.
Yeah. So for people, I realize that some people who listen to this might be too young to remember Real Big Fish, or also just not that interested in those kinds of bands. So that's fair. Take this time, go look up Real Big Fish, see their body of work.
We'll be here when you get back. Don't even worry about it. Just take a second.
Very popular.
Real Big Fish.
So anyway, this is one of the few examples we have of like an actual band that was making music at the time participating in anime culture and not just referencing it. They made this specific song for this specific show, which isn't like saying much. So the Rave Master OP is a Real Big Fish rock track. They do it in their style for the most part, which is, I guess, for a more popular example of the style of a lot of Real Big Fish songs, they come from like that same poppy rock genre of like Bare Naked Ladies.
Yeah, that's fair. I think they're better than Bare Naked Ladies, but
I agree. But the Rave Master OP is literally a summary of the entirety of Rave Master, like the entire plot hook of Rave Master. Like, it names all of the characters, it names how they got to know each other, and it tells you what they're looking for, which is to say the Rave Stones, and what the Rave Stones are important to. Because before the opening starts, there is always a summary of like the prehistory of Ravemaster. So it's designed in a way to hook kids in no matter when they watch it, no matter what episode you catch. And I think it's because Ravemaster was in a weird time slot. So if you were watching it, like you were really there and you could have been catching any episode of Ravemaster.
Yeah. And I like that it focuses on like what a Ravemaster is, or like the fact that the main character is attempting to become like the next Ravemaster. And it shows the main character a lot, so you're not confused about who is attempting to become the next Ravemaster by collecting all of the Ravestones. There's also a really funny referential lyric to like the animal companion of the series, which is this, like similar to the animal companion, or one of them, in Fairy Tale, right? I don't remember what the exact lyric is. Is it like a dog snowman thing? I don't remember.
Okay. So there's a character who is named Plue. In Ravemaster, who is the celestial spirit for the door of Canis Minor in the Fairy Tale, implying that the Fairy Tale spirit realm is actually just the Ravemaster world. And even Plue, because he is a plot important like character to Ravemaster, because he can sense the Ravestones and he is a part of like the MacGuffin convention of Ravemaster, is mentioned in Ravolution, which is the name of the theme song. So he who wields the sword must next become the master, Haru Glory, our main character, seeking out the stones with a carrot nose dog. Like, that's just a lyric.
That's what I thought it was, carrot nose dog. And
it's also one of the only times, like pre-Fairy Tale, where it is acknowledged that Plue is supposed to be a dog.
Plue is supposed to be a dog. Plue, for all of you at home who haven't seen Ravemaster, can't blame you. Not like the most popular series. Doesn't look like a dog. Looks vaguely like a tiny snowman. Maybe that's my brain being weird, but not a dog.
No, he looks like a tiny snowman with like arms and legs and a carrot nose. Like, that's the whole joke.
No, that's what dogs look like. I own a dog. I would know. My dog has a carrot nose. Does yours not?
No.
That was a trick question. Xavier doesn't have a dog.
But yeah, and it's a relatively short song, only spans for 3 stanzas, and then repeats itself. So it's very much just trying to ingrain itself in the heads of the viewer. But it gives you all the necessary information. There's evil, there's these things called the Shadow Stones, there's these things called the Rave Stones, there's a main character named Haru, and he's setting out with his gang of friends to find the answer. If you're familiar with the OP, you may recognize that that is literally just a stanza of the song. Haru and the gang set out to find the answer, but together we must find a way to beat the Shadow Stones.
Yes, and you just see all of these things. It's very straightforward. It's to the point. You know what you're getting. You're excited to rave some masters, you know?
Also, it has one of the most hype call to adventures, in the same way that like It's Time to Duel is a call to adventure in the Yu-Gi-Oh opening. 3-2-1 time for Ravolution.
Yeah,
because the entire world is run by a tyrannical government called Shadow Doom, and the Rave Master is supposed to free them.
3-2-1 time for Ravolution does kind of go. I like that lyric a lot. I don't know if this has my favorite lyrics of any of them. It might. Maybe a later one is a little bit better, but I do think this is one of the best written ones. I like that they got like an actual band to do it instead of most of these, which are just sort of like some of the voice actors, or they got like a no-name to do it, you know, which is fine. Like, I support no-name artists, but it is cool being someone who like knows this weird kind of rock or is really into like vaguely ska music to be like, wow, shout out to Real Big Fish. Ravolution, also good song title.
That said, unlike Trey, I don't think this is the best written song that's going to be mentioned tonight, but Trey doesn't know what's on my list.
I that's true. I don't. I will say my next song is nowhere near the best written song on this list. And I, forewarning for all of you, most of the shows we talk about, or most of the manga we talk about, I recommend giving a try. I don't recommend giving this a try. This is the first non-recommendation I'll be mentioning on the show. Can you guess what it is, Xavier?
Kirby.
It's Kirby. So there was a Kirby anime called Kirby Right Back Atcha. And Kirby Right Back Atcha, not a good television show. Pretty bad CG, pretty bad monster of the week shit, fun voice acting, and a really, really wild finale. That's a movie that I enjoyed watching, but I don't watch this. Just go watch both the openings. The English opening, it's so weird. It almost, to me, feels like the Tequila Song in the stupidest way possible. And I don't know, like, it has the same vibe. I can't explain why. I don't do music theory.
But did you say the Tequila Song?
Yes. That's the vibe I get. My brain doesn't work. Don't worry about it.
I guess that's fair because it's sort of like a name repeat song.
Yeah.
So that's the main motif.
The lyrics are Kirby, Kirby, Kirby. That's a name you should know. Kirby, Kirby, Kirby. He's the star of the show. He's more than you think. He's got maximum pink. Kirby, Kirby. Kirby's the one. Then it says,
you forgot where they scream Kirby in like a jazz voice like 20 times.
That's why it reminds me of the Tequila Song, because they scream Kirby in the jazz voice, and we're getting there. He comes right back at you. He comes right back at you. Give it all that you've got. Take your very best shot. He'll send it right back at you for sure. And then they have the main antagonist of the series talking to each other in tune with the music. And they go, how can I help you, King DDD? I need a monster to clobber that there Kirby. That's what we do best at NME. And then Escargoon going, you'd better get it with a money back guarantee, which is just them having a conversation in the opening every time, which sets you up for the fact that this is a monster of the week show where King DDD is going to ask a vague man on the television to give him a monster. And then Kirby is going to beat the monster. Then there's, they shout Kirby a bunch, basically, like a bunch of times. They say, don't be fooled by his size. You won't believe your eyes. Kirby, Kirby, Kirby's the one right back at you. Yeah. And holy shit, this is so fun. It's really stupid, and it's completely different from the Japanese opening, which is what we're going to talk about next, but I love this opening. When I was a kid who had Netflix when they used to send DVDs to your home, I watched Kirby Right Back At You months at a time because it was always super backordered, and it would take them 6 months to send me one copy of like four episodes of Kirby Right Back At You. That's how I saw it for the first time. And for those who don't know what Kirby is, he's a little pink puffball who has a power where when he eats things, he gets their power. That's what the Right Back At You is. He's going to take your power and use it right back at you. That's the whole joke. That's literally the entire joke of the theme song. There isn't another one. Unless I'm really dumb.
No, there isn't another joke. And I mean, the entire show's name in a Kirby style, because Kirby is a series of video games, is a pun, essentially.
Yeah, it's a pun that I like a lot. I will say, Xavier made me watch the Japanese opening for Kirby Right Back At You before this. And the visuals of the Kirby Right Back At You English opening theme are different stills from the show. You get to see a variety of monsters. You get to see weird, wacky shenanigans happening to Kirby, Meta Knight, and the gang. You get to see King DDD and Escargoon. It's great. It's a fun time. The Japanese one is completely original visuals of the main cast walking in step to basically a military march for like a minute and a half straight.
Yeah, and I would argue, right, the Japanese version is keeping in line with the Japanese conception of Kirby, which is a decently dark story about the last soldier from a forgotten like race of people. Like, that is what Kirby is, even though he's an adorable puffball. That is not the show Kirby Right Back At You is.
Oh, absolutely not. In the video games, right, Kirby is like a young one of these like Star Warriors, basically, who throughout the games repeatedly has to basically kill like Eldritch gods and entire planets and things, because that's what Kirby does, is be the last Star Warrior. And up until the very end of Kirby Right Back At You, that is not what happens in the show. He just fights a bunch of goofy monsters and has goofy adventures until at the very end they do fight like this giant, evil, dark, chaotic being or whatever, and Kirby continues to be Kirby. But the Japanese theme is in line with what Kirby is like traditionally, I agree, and the English theme is more in line with what Kirby Right Back At You as a show is up until that final film. Like, I'm totally with you, 100%.
And I think this is just a byproduct of, so one, hats off to the English studio for, I feel like, doing a better job of fitting the show, like, in tone. But I think that the reason that they fit the show better in tone is because for kids, regardless of whether or not the show was meant to be mature and serious, kiddified everything because they were like, but it's a cartoon. No matter how serious the plot was, which is why they also had, like, a shit ton of censorship. So in this case, it worked out because the creators of Right Back At You created a kid version of Kirby, almost.
Yeah, this is like one of the few times where kiddifying it kind of makes it feel better, which, like, one you're probably going to get to very soon that we talked about prior, where a certain character had a cigarette censored as a lollipop and a million things like that. I don't think the censorship in that adds to that series at all. Whereas I'm kind of down with how Kirby Right Back At You's English OP is. I kind of just like it a lot. It's really charming and stupid, but I like it a lot.
Also, there's just so many implications about, like, military marches and things like that in the West, so I don't think you could have gotten away with it as easily. And now, like, that problem just gets circumvented with things like Attack on Titan, and it's just like, we're going to play the Japanese version. But it would be super interesting to hear what weird butt rock the Attack on Titan English opening would be.
If the official dub team of Attack on Titan had to make an OP to match those visuals, I'm terrified of what chaos those people would create.
I'm convinced it would sound like the Metal Gear Rising Revengeance soundtrack. Like, it would just be Rules of Nature.
Okay, so I'm with you that that's what it would be. I don't know how I feel about that, but I think that's kind of the direction you'd have to take, like, an Attack on Titan English opening. You'd have to make it, like, Rising. And it could even do the thing Rising does, where, like, you could make it from Aaron Yeager's perspective, and you can make all the lyrics sound like Aaron Yeager was saying them about his situation to stay in line with, like, this English OP's talk about the show thing.
Yeah, it would be fun. It's a fun thing to think about.
Yeah, 100%. But that's what I got for Kirby. Surprisingly, not that deep of a show. Don't have a ton to say. Please don't watch it. Just watch the movie on YouTube.
The one last thing I'll say about the Kirby Right Back At You OP, and this is sort of a theme for English dub original OPs, super high energy, like one of the most high energy things ever. Like, will definitely get a kid excited to watch something and annoy parents adequately. And I guarantee you, like, a parent who hears this had it stuck in their head because of how upbeat, cheery, and repetitive it is.
Mm-hmm. And this one was, like, a little bit jazzy. There you go. That's what's special about Kirby.
So the next one I'm going to pick is, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! In the sense that it doesn't have a particularly strong variety of lyrics, but it captures mood. And that's Metabots.
I knew it was coming. I love this OP.
So Metabots, or as it's known in Japan sometimes, Metarot. The English OP chooses to go for, like, a techno rock sound to start it. And, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Has this buildup into a bunch of, like, synthesized instruments and a really heavy guitar riff, punctuated by the words, more power, over and over again, until you get to the part that does kind of summarize what's happening, where it yells in a 80s, early 90s rock voice, 22nd century, and then you get, like, the stereotypical fake movie trailer, bum 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 bum, like, literally they just do that.
Look, it's good, okay? It's iconic.
And then they completely, like, I'm pretty sure, mute a section of the song, almost. Like, they turn the decibels on the instrumental, like, almost all the way down for the character, Icky, who's the main character, to say, activate Metabee, like, as he's, like, as a line read. And then it ends on the beautiful lyrics, it's time to battle. Gattle addle, I think.
Gattle addle?
Drop. I think it's I think they tried to do an onomatopoeia for Metabee's Gatling gun.
Okay.
Till you drop. And, like, they scream till you drop. And then you get the Metabots logo. And the entire time, all of the, like, visuals are just Metabot battles. Like, it is just, here's all the action, here's all the action. Child, watch this show. It's robots fighting each other. But you look at the Japanese opening, and it's way more low-key. Most of the shots are still shots of the kids and their robots standing together, and very little actual fighting.
Well, American kids need that fight stuff to get them into the show, duh.
Yeah, no, all that hyper-violence, like good.
That's what Americans want, dog.
Also, sort of a reversal. When you think Japanese opening visuals, a lot of people think spoilers. The American version spoils a lot more things visually than the Japanese versions. So, for instance, in Metabots, and I don't feel bad about spoiling this, Metabots came out fucking forever ago. There's a secret power that only some Metabots have called the Metaforce. And this doesn't get revealed till almost the end of, like, the first part of Metabots. They just show the first time that Metabee and Rokusho, who's like a deuterogonist, use the Metaforce in the opening.
Yeah. Come on. The kids got to have something to look forward to. It's like, it'd be like if in Shala had Shala, they were just like, yeah, that's what a Super Saiyan looks like.
Yeah, it's very weird, but also, like, on brand. Speaking of Shala Head Shala, even though that's not, like, on the official one, in Rock the Dragon, you do just see what a Super Saiyan looks like.
That's true. Yeah, they just did that. Don't worry about it, though. It's fine.
Yeah, but those are my thoughts on Metabots. It really kept to the theme. It tried to make it as techno and futuristic as possible. And I'm pretty sure, like, a lot of the themes and motifs for that would later get, like, lifted for Megaman.exe when that came to the West. But, you know, just good.
So I don't have a ton to say about the OP, but I have a question. Maybe I'm remembering series incorrectly. Didn't Metabots have like a surprisingly killer like animation team lineup? Am I misremembering shows? Maybe this is just the
only thing. Metabots had a good animation team lineup, and like as far as action, for a show like that, the action was pretty well animated. Like you can say you don't like the style of Metabots, right?
Yeah,
but the like actual animation quality of the frames was pretty good.
Yeah, don't quote me on this, but like. If my memory serves me correctly, I'm pretty sure like people that would go on to work at like Gainax and Trigger, like some people who went on to work at those studios, got early breaks like animating fight scenes in Metabots or something, which is just kind of cool. That may be wrong, but I don't remember. This is something that I feel like I remember.
No, you're entirely right. In fact, Yutaka Nakamura did two episodes of Metabots.
Yeah, there you go. That guy went to go do all the shit at Bones. That guy went to do all the shit at Bones.
One of the early episodes from 1999, Masaki Yuasa.
I'm a little mad that I knew that. But like, yeah, nah. Like, Nakamura... Yuasa, I fucking think Imaishi is somewhere in this show, like unironically. That's the one that came to mind because I knew Nakamura was in there. Masaki Yuasa surprises me as someone who hasn't seen the series at all. But I mean, you got to get your start somewhere. So like, shout out to Metabots.
Imaishi is an uncredited key animator from an episode in 1999.
Dude, I got the anime trivia for Metabots, a series I've never seen. Let's go.
That's fair. But no, like, if you're familiar with the quality of Metabots, the show, it is strange that a show like that, even though it has become like a long-running, almost household name in Japan, had such talented animators on it.
Hell yeah. We stan. Yeah, I had to bring that up because I literally know nothing of Metabots or the OP, other than the fact that, like, some people that I like their work were on it eventually.
No, from the start. So Metabots ran from 1999 to 2004. Those people were on it in the episodes that ran from 1999 to 2002.
Hell yeah. Look at that, everybody. That's your fun anime fact of the week, which is not going to become a recurring bit. But there you go. All your favorite cool animators were on Metabots. Don't even worry about it. Even uncredited people, even dead people, they all worked on Metabots.
A lot of people worked on Metabots. They had a lot of animators.
Yeah. I'm good to go on my third series if you're done.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Bait and switch. It's anime news corner time. Ha ha ha. Bet you didn't expect that one.
No, I did. I did.
Yeah.
As you said, anime fun fact, you diagrammed it too hard.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's so I realized that I said that. I realized that I said that. When I said that, it reminded me that we had to do the news corner. So that wasn't actually intentional. Because sometimes I'll forget until the very end, and it's really awkward, but it's okay.
No, that's when you just make the last thing. Here's the anime news, by the fucking way, I guess.
We did that once. We literally had the, like, the last 5 minutes. Remember the episode on the power scaling episode? We did the anime news thing like right before the last 10 minutes about Record of Ragnarok. But the news for this week, right? And how I do this is I just go scroll through anime news shit, is that Fate's Day Night, Heaven's Feel, the third film in the trilogy, which is subtitled Spring Song, released in Japan on August 15th and debuted at number one during the box office that weekend. But the fun fact...
I'm so fucking hype.
Oh, dude. Can we watch like number one and number two as someone who's never seen
them? Yeah, you got to catch up.
Okay. I've seen Fate Zero. I've seen part of Stay Night and part of Blade Works. I'll catch up. But the cool thing is that the trilogy's third film is getting a 4D screening starting September 4th. And this article, I've scoured it. I've scoured this article by reading its six paragraphs. They don't tell you what the 4D experience is like for this series. So I have no idea if you're going to like, he's going to do a funny blade work and like, you're going to get a knife thrown at you. Or if someone's going to like, you're going to get like they're going to like throw like red watercolored blood at you or something. I have no idea. But there is a 4D screening of Fate Stay Night, Heaven's Feel 3 Spring Song, which just sort of brings me great joy.
Okay, so one, super jealous. Oh, super fucking jealous. I'm pretty sure I've mentioned it kind of on this show before. Big fucking Fate fan, a big fucking Natsuverse fan in general. And I'm jealous, but also I'm really curious what they mean by 4D, because so much like weird fucked up things that you could make into a texture happen in Heaven's Feel, especially the part where movie 2 sucked.
Yeah, I mean, on our fantastic plug, you ready? All right, here we go.
Yeah.
If you follow us on Twitter at SatAnimePod, I will tweet out any information we find regarding what a 4D screening of Fate Stay Night, Heaven's Feel 3 Spring Song means. There you go. Go follow the Twitter. In all seriousness, though, at the end of the Anime News Corner is the part where I say thank you all for listening and continuing to support the show. If you want more information or to see my weird nighttime ramblings or to see me continually retweet Sakuga accounts, follow us at SatAnimePod on Twitter. The DMs are always open for you to ask us questions and bully our opinions, et cetera, et cetera. I'll be very nice to you, I promise. Thank you guys for being patient with the release schedule. We've lost some recordings and we've both, I'm going to out us here. We've both moved back to being educated at the college. So this is our first time with both of us recording like within 100 feet of each other, which is pretty hilarious. And yeah, thank you guys so much. If you enjoy the show, I hope you continue to listen. I hope you can share it with a friend or a community of friends who will also enjoy the show. And this is where I'm going to spoil the fact that we have a kind of famous YouTube guest coming on sometime in the coming weeks. And we're really looking forward to that. I'm going to tweet out sometime in the next 2 weeks what series we're talking about. So you got to go follow us on Twitter. But yeah, thank you guys. And thus concludes the Anime News Corner.
I forget whose turn we were on.
It's mine.
Sweet.
You ready? This is one that this might be the best written one. I think this is the best written one we've addressed so far. It is Carl Finch's Smile Bomb for Yu Yu Hakusho.
I mean, that's a good pick.
Yeah.
But like, hoo boy, you don't know what he'd got in the tuck.
That's true. You do have two more, and I expect you to blow me out of the water. But, for those who don't know, we've talked about it often. Yu Yu Hakusho is a shonen series that was written by Togashi, who is the man who wrote Hunter x Hunter. And Yu Yu Hakusho, first of all, really fantastic. One of the best shonen ever created. Something
I take better than Hunter x Hunter. Fight me.
Yeah, they're pretty on par for me. I can be convinced. It's pretty fantastic. I will say, this is something that's really near and dear to the hearts of both of us, It goes so far back as Xavier watching the Dark Tournament on VHS, as we've talked about on the show prior. And this OP is part of that for me. I'm going to read the lyrics because I feel like anyone who's watched Yu Yu Hakusho will know.
No, you got to sing them. You have to sing them. It's Smile Bomb. If you're going to say them, you have to. I'll do it.
You can do it. I don't trust my singing voice right now. You can do it. I'm a little stuffy.
No, I'm going to sing terribly on purpose because that's how I did it when I was a kid.
Okay, go for it. Are you going to sing the whole song?
Running in a town, in a faceless town, I seem to feel the touch of a friend.
In the countryside,
a wanderer in isolation gives me again. Rest in peace, anyone who wears headphones. I'm so sorry. I promise we'll never do that again.
I don't promise that we'll never do that again. I kind of like that.
As a line read, Trey, please clarify the ramblings that we just had.
I really liked the really, really missed duet of the Isolation Gets Me Again. That kind of hit. We're really good at this whole podcast thing. But running in a crowd, in a faceless town, I need to feel the touch of a friend. In the countryside, I wander far and wide. The isolation gets me again. I don't know where to go when I feel like crying. Oh my, it's time to open myself, do something new. I want to stop and grow up a bit. Then there's the refrain. Then suddenly my power and confidence start swelling up, magically erupt, and it's all because of the kindness that I feel from people I don't even know. Then suddenly my intuition and my wisdom grow. And then I know that most of all, I sense compassion's real. Thanks to strangers wherever I go. Thank you for waking me up. And there's a lot more lyrics if you look at the whole song. But those are the lyrics of the like OP part for Yu Yu Hakusho.
Yeah.
And for anyone paying attention, those lyrics are literally talking about how like understanding and compassion are what bring you better development as a person and allow you to become the best version of yourself that you're supposed to be. Which is like half, if not most of the point of what happens to Yusuke and Yu Yu Hakusho.
Yeah. And also it's just so, it's such a touchstone moment, I think, in a lot of people's development as people. It's hard to trust people, especially in the times we live in. But Yu Yu Hakusho's OP reminds you that like, no matter where you end up in life, no matter how isolated you feel, that you've passed all of these people that in some way have altered your perspective and helped you grow. And sometimes when you feel lost and isolated, you have to stop and remember that and allow yourself that time to grow, just like you did before on your journey to wherever you are now. And so much of Yu Yu Hakusho is wrapped up in not just Yusuke changing other people's lives by coming into contact with so many people, but them changing Yusuke from the loner street punk that he was into someone that doesn't just care about his friends, but in the last arc of Yu Yu Hakusho, cares about an entire country's worth of people he's never met because he feels a responsibility to.
Which is just kind of fantastic. Like, I think Yusuke is one of the most realized protagonists like in the history of shonen. Like, if I'm being real, I think Yusuke is one of, if not the best shonen protagonists probably ever written. And the whole arc of the emotions he goes through is laid out for you in the first minute of the first episode of Yu Yu Hakusho when Smile Bomb plays. And it's not something that tells you like the story of what Yu Yu Hakusho is about, which I don't even know if you could do that in a one-minute song. Shit gets really weird in Yu Yu Hakusho sometimes, and it changes genre almost entirely more than once. Which is why I think getting across the emotional core of Yu Yu Hakusho is kind of what this song is set out to do, and has succeeded in, like, beautifully, at least for me.
Yeah, I mean, I could talk about Yu Yu Hakusho for, like, hours on end.
Which we will do.
But there's something, and I hate bringing it up over and over again because of what's happened with the author, and I never know how I feel about separating the art from the artist in situations like these, but it's one of those things that, like, paired with the opening for Rurouni Kenshin, Freckles, was just sort of these moralistic takes, and this is rare, and I think any music designed for TV consumption specifically, in that it is trying to teach you a moral lesson that is implicit within the structure of the show. And the opening is trying to do that for you. And because it's in English for Western audiences, because a lot of what we're saying about English anime openings is specifically to the benefit of Western audiences, because you have more mastery of the language and can memorize this more readily, you can more readily receive the moral implications. So even if you don't watch the show that way, because a lot of people just watch shows for escapism and a sense of disbelief or like a power fantasy, which are all valid, but the opening draws you back into those moralistic lessons in both cases of those shows.
And if you've ever read or watched Yu Yu Hakusho or Hunter x Hunter, getting across like morals and shit is something Togashi, to varying degrees of success, attempts to do a lot. So I really, really appreciate that the song goes to such lengths to convey that sort of like emotion and that moral that is so important to the original creator of the series. That's just something that really like resonates with me and comes off so fucking respectful. Whereas like the Kirby Right Back Atcha people were able to successfully like mimic the tone that the show should have had. The Carl Finch with Smile Bomb was able to just hit the point of Yu Yu Hakusho right on the head. And there's a bunch of examples within the series of how it makes sense, but we'll get to spoiling Yu Yu Hakusho whenever we have the episode about it.
Also, as an anecdote, and I'll see if when I link them, I can find this specific YouTube video. There is a YouTube video that's a full version of the Yu Yu Hakusho opening with all three verses of the original song. And in the comments, you see one of the stories that I think can only be had by an opening of Yu Yu Hakusho, where it's a guy talking about knowing someone in high school who always watched Yu Yu Hakusho, and he didn't understand why he was so obsessed with cartoons, but he remembered the opening because he really liked the opening, even if he didn't understand why his friend was so obsessed with cartoons. And he was basically just like, yeah, no, that friend died, but stumbling back on this, like, I can't believe how much of that has applied to my life, and how much this makes me think of that friend. And even though I like things like the Yu-Gi-Oh! OP or the Fighting Fudons OP, they don't have that much power implicit within the very writing.
Absolutely not. There's nothing else to be said. When we're going through the list, picking our series, Xavier likes to play this fun game called Trey, You Read Me Mine to make sure we don't have the same list, and then I'll surprise you with mine throughout the episode to keep it interesting. And when I said, hey, did you pick Smile Bomb, which I think I said like 2 or 3 days ago when we were planning this episode, he told me I could have it, and I was fucking ecstatic, because this is the kind of thing where like I consider Smile Bomb to be like a top 20 all time, even though it's in English, for that level of just wow in the emotion behind it.
And I'm not sure. I'm actually going to look it up, because this one might be like Freckles in that it's just an English version of the same song.
That's true. I don't actually know if there is or what it would be for the Japanese Yu Yu Hakusho opening. I never looked.
It is. Okay. So it is the same. And it's Hohime no Bakudan. So Smile Bomb. First and only opening, whole way through.
Yep.
Sung by Mawatari Matsuko in the original and Sarah White in the English.
Yes.
So it's great to me that like both of these things were able to come through. And I think it speaks to like the quality of translation that they were able to capture so much of what Yu Yu Hakusho is about through translating the opening out from the Japanese. And like we've talked about before, YouTube has a very diverse dubbing community. So like this is still realistic to do.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. As we've talked about them before, but people like Nate Wants to Battle, or specifically like Amelie, right? That is what I like most about their work. Not like the performance itself, right? But attempting to translate the ideas of the song to English and keep it with the original music track. And I think this is, in that case, one of the best examples of that that I've ever had the pleasure of seeing. Even if it wasn't done by like Amelie or Nate Wants to Battle or something, it was done through like the studio, presumably. But shout out to those guys, because damn.
Yeah, but enough of these like emotions. Fuck that. Kick it to the curb.
Out the bread immediately. I have no more emotions.
We're going to talk about the actual best written song because it's pure hype.
I know what it is.
50 fucking cc's of adrenaline straight to your body. The beginning is riddled with exclamation points in the lyrics. Battle beat 'em on.
Is this the one you think is best written, or is the last one, your closing one,
No, this is the best written.
Okay.
Battle beat 'em on is the best written. Look, what should be a toy commercial, right? And Battle Beat 'em On is another one of these ones, which is a translated opening. What should be a toy commercial, they take the time to make into a miniature folklore about the Beat 'em On world. So the opening words are ready, set, and then a yelled beat a fire.
I rewatched this opening yesterday. It's really good.
And then they launch immediately like, fuck your plot, right? Because none of this has ever gone over in the show. In ancient times, the challenge was made, a sport of honor so many have played. Through all the highs and lows, victory or disaster, only the best can be called beat a champions, beat a fire, followed by a get ready, here we go, take down your foe. Like, what more do you need? Like, they just made it into, like, the Iliad. And, like, if you don't know what Beat-em-on is, which I hope you don't, because they make it sound so much more epic than what a Beat-em-on actually is. It's like a Gundam, kind of, like a squat SD Gundam that's also a marble shooter, and they shoot marbles at each other.
It's so good. Rewatching this OP, I watched it with my sweet mates. You know who I live with.
Yeah.
One of them who doesn't watch anime, fucking flabbergasted, had no idea what was going on and why it was so hype, and he saw the marbles and was like, this is a joke, right? Like, this is a bit.
No!
I was like, absolutely not. This is as hype as it fucking gets.
And Battle Beat 'em On has this tone problem in general that the opening captures so well, where Battle Beat 'em On is about an ancient struggle to save the world that has been fought completely through beat-em-on battles, which is the most ridiculous thing in anime, screw it, I will say, to happen before we found out that Moses parted the Red Sea with the Beyblade.
Okay. So I'm thinking about the historical implications of the beat-em-on world. And while, first of all, I think it's fantastic that the Red Sea was parted with a Beyblade, in fact, I think that's real. Think about, like, Battle Beat 'em On historically. Like, imagine you roll up to, like, the knightly castle, and they got the tar, and they got the moat.
Oh, there's a character that's this whole thing.
They got
this whole thing.
They got the moat. They got the knights. They got the archers, you know? We got kings and queens and shit. We got feudalism. Feudalism out the ass. And, like, a 13-year-old kid walks up to a castle with a marble shooter and is like, you want this work?
So there's a character in Battle Beat 'em On. This isn't the Battle Beat 'em On episode, but that's his whole gimmick, is he comes from a super rich knightly family that has a tradition of having Beat 'em On that follow a naming convention like Lord Cavalry and High Lord Cavalry. And his dad has like a gold-plated Beat 'em On and is like, you'll never be worth the family Beat 'em On because you suck so much and you have too much empathy. So he starts like this giant Beat 'em On battling castle where he just tries to prove he's the best. I'm pretty sure his name is like Kane. A really cool guy.
Okay, I know this isn't the Beat 'em On episode, but like, imagine you roll up it's Normandy, 1940s. You know what it is.
Yeah.
You're storming the beach. All the homies getting shot at by marbles. You get to the top of that, at the top of that cliff, and you got to start like beat them on battling some Nazis.
No, that's what would happen. What? Like, I don't think you understand. That's basically the plot of this show.
I think that's fantastic.
That said, interesting point here. I think the English dub is better than the Japanese version because of the way the two are sung. And this is a really interesting thing that happens between the two. The English voice for the song, who I don't know the name of the singer off the top of my head. Anyway, the English verse for the song is like a young guy who's doing like that like Western, like almost Big Iron voice, but then like that low whisper. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes,
like
I know.
Like old cowboy movie shit?
I know. Believe me, I know me some old cowboy movie shit.
But like the Japanese version is this, they're going for like the same feel, right? But it's this older Japanese guy with like a gravelly smoker voice that almost like reminds you of, what the fuck is his name? Trey did the cover of Hurt.
Oh, Johnny Cash.
Yeah, what? No, it sounds like a Japanese Johnny Cash.
Trey did the cover of Hurt. Help.
Yeah, no, it sounds like a Japanese version of Johnny Cash.
It does.
And the visuals are way more subdued towards the end. But like the beginning half of it, in fact, I would say 3/4 of the visuals are the exact same. It's so weird.
Yes. Yes. This is true.
But yeah, no, that is the best written because it takes this silly marble shooter game and it's like, hey, did you want to read Homer's The Odyssey? Because that's what we're doing. Get in the car.
I do want to say, I find it more realistic that Egyptian kings were deciding grand matters of life and death with card games than I do that most of human history was Beat-em-on. I do find that more believable.
Do you want to know the best part about Beat-em-on, the fact that most of human history was decided by Beat-em-on?
Sure.
Beat-em-on are sentient.
I forgot that. That means some Beat-em-on chose to be Nazis, S-Y-H.
Also some, again, not the Beat-em-on episode, but some Beat-em-on are dangerous. So in the subsequent season, Beat-em-on Crossfire, one guy who's like going around finds the Beat-em-on that like responds only to him called Revolver Hades. And everyone's just like, isn't that like a weapon to kill people? And he's like, bitch, it might be.
Did you say Revolver Hades like a fucking Metal Gear Solid character?
Yes, it's called Revolver Hades because it has a barrel that, depending on how you set the barrel, can curve the marble shots in interesting and irregular ways.
So they stole it from Wanted.
Yes. In fact, Wanted stole it from Battle Beat-em-on.
Don't tell the person who wrote Wanted that. Please don't. I think you'll get exiled from the comic graphic novel community. I don't care. Probably. I don't care if it's true. You take that shit out.
Statements that would get your comic book card driven.
On that note, are you good with Battle Beat-em-on? I know you could go on. This is yes. The only thing on your Mal. It's a 10 on your Mal.
Yeah, no, it is a 10. It's a 10 out of 10 show. But I will let the people go free so that they can listen to it and go watch the entire show.
Speaking,
because that's what they're going to do.
I hope that any of you who can prove to me that this episode inspired you to watch all of Battle Beat-em-on, you get a special prize. Hit the Twitter. That being said, I'm going to go to another 10 out of 10 show. Manga, a 10 out of 10 manga, not a show. It's Shaman King, baby. We're going to get that 10 out of 10 Shaman King show, though. It's going to happen. Don't just you wait. 2021, you know. The Shaman King English opening does my favorite thing that any of these things do, which is with the part where it really likes to shout the name of the show a lot, just like Kirby and Yu-Gi-Oh does. Look around you, look beyond. You could make an unbreakable bond. Which is said while like showing off the main character and like all the oversouls and shit. The world around you is not what it seems. Soul revealed beyond your wildest dreams. And then a bunch of like parenthetical shit where it's like so many things I never could see. So many choices fallen on me. Could it be my destiny to be Shaman King? And then it just shouts Shaman King to be Shaman King. Shaman King, if your spirit is strong, you could be the one.
And then this like really weird like almost like drum circle breakdown happens.
Yes, and the drum, killer. Love this drum. I love the instrumental for the Shaman King OP. I can look at the world in a different light. I know what it means to make it right, and I won't give up the fight to be Shaman King. So approximately 95% of the lyrics of this song are the words Shaman King, because if you don't say the show title over and over again, the little kids are going to forget what show they're watching. Which I actually kind of like that they say Shaman King a lot, because in the manga they say Shaman King a lot, and the word shaman being related to modern technological objects is actually its own running gag. So I'm fine with that. I'm mostly just in this because this is the song that I wanted to pick to show off how blatant that these four kids dubs could get with just throwing in cool, like let's put a guitar and a big drum riff and shout the series name a lot.
Yeah, and it works so well, and part of it is the visuals are actually really well timed and like on beat to the music, which is not the norm for these openings.
I agree. I think the editing for the Shaman King OP is actually kind of high tier to top tier compared to a lot of these English dub openings. And I know what your fifth one is. I do think the Shaman King one is better than your fifth one.
I disagree entirely.
Now, I have not watched all of Shaman King. I have read it. I know Shaman King kind of goes off the rails from the manga in the anime, but as weird as this is to say, Shaman King can be kind of dark. I actually think this opening isn't that bad for the tone.
It's not that bad. It's not quite as dark as like the show, but like it definitely captures more of early Shaman King than later Shaman King.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes sense.
Because early Shaman King is literally just be hype, do cool oversoul fights, I want to be Shaman King before all the crazy shit, cool shit happens. Like, I'm with you.
Also, on the anime hilarious bullshit meter, Shaman King is pretty high up there because it's canon in Shaman King that every religious figure, Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, Shiva, Vishnu, you know, all your greats, just Shaman Kings.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome. And all of like their oversouls that they had to like do all the cool religious shit, those were also like sentient. So like, you can only imagine like the power of like Jesus and his oversoul or something. Kind of annoyed he got killed by the Romans, but whatever.
And the only way you can become Shaman King is to win a giant death tournament, which means Jesus definitely like killed some people on his way to the top.
As it should be. I think you pacifist Shaman King's not allowed. Also, Buddha.
No, you have to win.
Huge murderer. As should be. But I don't have a ton to say about the Shaman King opening's visuals or the lyrics or anything really. The whole point I wanted to get across was this is the one that feels the most four kids dubby to me, right? Like, whenever I think of the Shaman King OP, I immediately also think of stuff like the Sonic X OP or something, you know, which is one that isn't on here and is another TV show that you shouldn't watch.
I don't know about that. I enjoy Sonic X, especially the last season.
Yeah, I also like Sonic X, but I don't know if the first two seasons are, and like knowing what Chris is worth getting to season three. Because in season three, it just becomes edgy Star Wars.
Yeah, but like it's fun edgy Star Wars with hedgehogs.
Yes, season three is good. I don't know if the first two seasons are worth it. This four kids shit kind of bad, because now I know that Sonic X not even on the list, but I'm about to give you guys the real tech here. You ready? Play Sonic Adventure 1 and then watch like the second half of season 2 and season 3. That's how you should do it. Unironically.
No, because the beginning of season 2 is the Shadow arc and Sonic X has the best version of Shadow.
Could you repeat that for the crowd?
I said the like beginning of season 2 of Sonic X is the Shadow arc, and that's the best rendition of Shadow the Hedgehog that we have.
Yeah, I heard you. I just wanted you to say it for the back because I kind of agree. Like I'm kind of with you. As much as I like Sonic Adventure 2 Shadow, I do think it's kind of better in Sonic X. But go watch Shaman King instead. It's better than Sonic X. I'm fucking sorry, okay? This podcast has gone in weird directions today. Do you have other things to say about Shaman King? We're going to do an episode about that. It might be a while, because we're probably not going to do it until that new Shaman King comes out, and that's like a year from now.
The only other thing I would say is Shaman King horrible at establishing what it's about in any way, shape, or form. Like, the visuals are cool, but they're just sort of the cool shit that it's, like, about. So in the same way, the Yu-Gi-Oh! Visuals don't actually tell you it's a card game. You can guess that they're ghosts, but, like, there's nothing really to tell you what's going on.
That's pretty fair. I think it's also a pretty big jump to assume any child will see, like, one of these things in their tiny, like, circle ghost form and then see them in, like, their full potential power form and be like, yep, that's the same thing. I do think that's a bit of a weakness. Like, I get hype when I watch the Shaman King OP, but that's because I know what Shaman King is, and they say Shaman King a lot, as I'm doing now. But I don't actually think it's that good at establishing what Shaman King is, because it's not like a ska song where it's just saying that there's a death tournament going on to decide who's going to be Shaman King via their Shaman pager or whatever.
Yeah. So here's the thing.
Yeah.
Before we get to my final one, mm-hmm. I have an honorable mention.
Okay.
Can you guess what my honorable mention is before I get to my final one?
So I know what your final one is, right?
Yeah.
Can I get like a hint about your honorable mention at all? Like, what made you think of this honorable mention maybe, or what?
Because it's iconic. That's the only hint you get.
Oh, because it's iconic? Another iconic English one? But we already have like the... Because mine's like the most iconic one, I think. One of the... Oh, it's got to be Digimon, isn't it? It's fucking Digimon.
No, it's not. It's not even the Digimon opening.
It's not?
You know what it is?
Also, offended neither of us did the Digimon one, but whatever, go.
There are too many good Digimon ones.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
The entire soundtrack of the original Digimon movie, because it's just weird ska punk bands.
I knew it was Digimon something, you asshole. I knew it. I got the series right.
For some reason, at the beginning of the original Digimon movie, you go from like bare naked ladies to real big fish to like fucking Smash Mouth, like almost immediately. It's real weird.
I should have assumed this is what it was, because we went out to dinner literally last night, socially distanced and with masks, of course. And he was like, hey, Trey. So I rewatched that Digimon movie. And did you remember that they went, like, just went through all the ska bands in the first 10 minutes of that movie? It's fucking weird.
But no, my final pick, as it were, is the One Piece rap song
that
Four Kids made.
I knew it, baby. Go off.
So here's the thing, right? A lot of people are like, this opening is horrible. I understand. It's kind of bad. It's like there's no good way to listen to it. It's horribly abrasive, horribly offensive to anyone that enjoys rap music.
Like us.
But it does two things really well that make it an effective OP. The first is introduce you, and this is as they gather straw hats, right?
This is true.
Literally every character and what their function is on the crew. Probably some of the best establishing of characters and like choosing the right frames of what those characters are doing in anime, like as far as English dub openings. Yeah. In anime in general.
Are you gonna read those lyrics?
I don't need to. His name's Zoa, just like a samurai, and an L-A-D-Y, Nami's not shy. Usopp's doing his marksman thing. Sanji's cooking. Chopper's doctoring. That was as far as they got.
That is as far as they got. They only got the chopper doctoring. That is true.
Yeah. So, again, tells you everything that these characters essentially function as in the crew. Shows you them doing these things. So as a kid, you're like, yeah, Chopper is doctoring.
He do be doctoring, though.
As an animation quality thing, original One Piece ain't that pretty, but they really do choose the best bits of animation from the show to string together.
That's true.
Do think they did Nami, like, a little wrong by just saying L-A-D-Y, Nami's not shy. Nami is so much more than just a fucking lady on the Straw Hat crew. One of my favorite Straw Hats before she got fucking fridged for the second half.
In fact, she's like... For the beginning chunk of that series, like, the most competent of those fucking characters, and literally the only reason they're not dead because she knows how maps work.
Yeah, so, like, basically, even for a little bit after Arlong Park, I would argue, like, into the Crocodile Save Alabasta arc, right?
Yeah.
Nami is one of the most important, actually useful members of the crew.
No, I agree entirely. I'm with you. I do think the OP doesn't Nami dirty, but like...
But the other thing that it does really well is it has been years since I have actually heard that song because I refused to listen to it. But everyone I know who hates it and who refuses to listen to it again knows those lyrics to a disturbing amount of accuracy, which means it properly imprinted upon us for Kids One Piece, which makes it a successful opening song, regardless of how bad it is.
So it's time for my anecdote. Picture me. I'm like 9 years old in a hotel, probably in like Florida. All right. The TV comes on. They got four kids having a good time. A random episode of One Piece comes on and I hear the One Piece rap and I'm so in. I'm so 9 year old Trey ready to watch some fucking One Piece, dude. And I loved it. And then I had no more experience with One Piece for a literal decade straight almost. And the only reason that I don't actually know all the lyrics of the One Piece rap is because since then I've only watched the rap two or three times, because the next time I even heard about One Piece was people shitting on the rap.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my One Piece experience.
And One Piece, again, I forgot to mention Luffy's part, because Luffy gets his kind of, I guess if I'm breaking it down, sorry, I'm going off memory, I'm not actually looking. I guess it, you could say his own stanza. That stanza is just what everyone else gets. After the dreaming, because the start of the song is like literally dreaming, don't give it up, Luffy, dreaming, don't give it up, Zoro. I apologize to everyone. Here's how the story goes. We find out about a treasure in the Grand Line. There's no doubt. The pirate whose eyes on it, he'll sing, I'll be king of the pirates. I'm going to be king. Telling you the plot hook, like immediately, right? And then after it says, I'll be king of the pirates, I'm going to be king, it immediately launches into our main character who wants to be king of the pirates. His name is Luffy. And then there's like this weird interjection, if I'm remembering correctly, where they say that's Monkey D. Luffy, because that's his whole name. Don't leave out the Monkey D. The D is actually disturbingly important to the entire One Piece world.
Aggressively plot relevant.
Gonna be king of the pirates. He's made of rubber. How did that happen? Yo ho ho, he took a bite of gum gum. And all of this is done in like a weird, silly voice that is not the voice of the rest of the rap at all.
Yeah, don't worry about it. It's plot relevant rapping.
Yeah, no, it's entirely plot relevant. It tells me exactly what Luffy is. Oh, his power is that he's made of rubber. Why is he made of rubber? Oh, don't worry about it. He took a bite of gum gum. I don't know what gum gum is, but if you are familiar with the visuals for that opening, they show all of the fucking devil fruit swirling around. So you're like, oh, the gum gum's a fruit.
There you go. I will say a thing that I do like about the Four Kids One Piece opening is that it didn't cut out the starting bit about Goldie Roger's treasure and the Grand Line and everything, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's still that little opening monologue about Goldie Roger, like, having the One Piece. I kept all my treasure. There's one piece.
One piece.
Yeah.
A speech which would later be retconned to all hell into something completely different.
That is true. But they did keep the speech in, which I think the speech, even if it's been retconned to shit, is kind of iconic in its own way, and I like it a lot, and I'm glad it's still in there. Like, I'm, like, at least... while writing this horrible offense to rap music, they left in the part where they're like, hey, here's this iconic Goldie Roger like murder thing.
Also, I'm sorry for the spoilers that we've accidentally said. Yes, his name is in fact Goldie Roger in the One Piece opening, and for most of the One Piece world they think his name is Gold Roger.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, that's a plot point that the Marines kept misspelling his name and saying his name was Gold Roger, which actually might have helped him survive towards the later years of his life before he got sick, because him being a D and the King of the Pirates probably would have made the fucking Celestial Dragons, who are like the world government, be like, absolutely fucking not.
I'm going to be real. Didn't know that because the first time I watched One Piece,
it was Marineford. We showed you Marineford. So you saw the scene where Whitebeard is like, ah, Gold D. Roger.
Yeah. No, I also, and then in some of the openings, the subtitles say Gold D and the Wikipedia page says Gold D.
Yeah. Cause they're all corrected for the plot reveal.
Well, I'm not that because
it's a big reveal and everyone just like shits themselves when White. So there's a flashback. Now that we're in spoiler territory, we're just in spoiler territory, where Whitebeard is talking about one of the last conversations he ever had with Gold Roger.
Yeah.
And he's drunk off his ass, and he's saying, Whitebeard, who he calls him by Teach, his actual name. Yeah. Sorry, Teach is Blackbeard. But he fucking putting my name wrong on the wanted posters. It's Gold D. Roger. And Whitebeard's like, you know, that D is really fucking weird. I have a couple D's on my crew, too. And he's like, you want it? And Gold D. Roger is like, you want to know the secret of the whole D initial? And Blackbeard's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Or Whitebeard, sorry. I get them confused a lot. What the fuck are you talking about? So, yeah, that's One Piece just foreshadowing its ass off.
Hey, does that guy Ace have a D in his name?
Yeah, Porcus D. Ace.
God damn it. Wow, all these characters, man.
Because not only is Gold D. Roger Gold D. Roger, but Ace's mom was also a D, Porcus D. Rouge. One of the only person we have confirmed that had two parents that were Ds.
Well, there you go. You just did a big spoiler, huh, kid? That's a...
Porcus D. Rouge is not a spoiler.
No. Two parents are D's. You just did the big Ace spoiler. You just did it.
That's not a spoiler because the only reason we don't have that confirmed for other characters is because we've never met their second parent.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I don't know if it's a spoiler, like who Ace's father is or not. That's what I'm saying.
It kind of is, but like if you've watched up to Alabasta, it'd be like that.
Okay. Are you done with One Piece? I don't want to talk about the bad rap anymore because I like good rap music. Do you want to sing this one too? You know which one this is. You know which one this is.
Which one is it?
I want to be the very best, like no one ever was. You know the whole deal?
And Trey, are you telling me? But to catch them is my real test. To train them is my cost.
Are we gonna go all the way to Pokemon?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I will travel across the land, searching far and wide.
We're not doing this whole song. Stop.
No.
Stop it right now. Talk about the fucking song.
Sing the next lyric. Trust me.
No.
Trust me.
No.
I'm just going to the first Pokemon. Just trust me.
Each Pokemon to understand the power that's inside. I'm not singing this anymore.
Pokemon. Gotta catch them all.
Oh, this is recorded.
Yeah, I know. This is going on the internet for real people to listen to. And, oh boy. Shame.
You know what? If C-Dog VA can wear, like, mini skirts on the internet, this is the least we could do.
First of all, we stand mini skirts on anyone. We subscribe to, wow.
Couldn't even get it out. That's how embarrassed you were.
Guy from Full Metal Alchemist, but not in Brotherhood, because there's the funny mini skirts line in Full Metal Alchemist, whose name I'm entirely forgetting, with the fire magic.
Are you talking about Roy Mustang?
I forgot Roy Mustang's name.
Jesus Christ.
We, like Roy Mustang, stan mini skirts on all people of all shapes, sizes, and types. Live your truth, king, queen, or otherwise. That being said, thank you for dealing with me. Singing part of the Pokemon theme song as someone who can't sing for shit. The original English Pokemon theme is one of the most iconic pieces of music within this fandom. Like, in doubt, undoubtedly. I don't know people.
I don't know a person that doesn't know it. Like, even like I don't know a person that doesn't know the Pokemon theme song.
My mom knows some of the lyrics to the Pokemon theme song. Like, that's just like, she just does. And my mom's anime experience is like 3.5 episodes of Death Note. And that's like how far and wide, that's a lyrical callback to the Pokemon theme song. You're welcome. How far and wide the Pokemon brand has reached. But I feel like I don't need to read them the rest of the lyrics of the Pokemon theme. I feel like everyone here already knows them all.
Yeah, and here's the thing, right? Pokemon is not just a theme song. Pokemon is a cultural event in the same way that Tamagotchi and Digimon are. But this song is really good. Like, I'm, like, thinking about it, the way that they do it builds such drama and tension, and, like, it opens on Ash in the middle of a Pokemon stadium, and the lights on him. Just a great buildup of tension for an amazing, like, vocal performance that just captures all of that good Pokemon cheese.
Yeah, no.
And, you know.
No, you go. You go. Go for it.
No, I was just saying, You can't ever count it out. Like, even I remember, you remember that big drama over the fact that Herman Cain, rest in peace, used the Pokemon 2000 like song.
The quote from Mewtwo. No, the quote from that's from the first movie. Quote from, I think, the villain of, or maybe Ash or somebody in the one with, like, the legendary birds and Lugia.
Yeah. And he quoted that, and it's like, there's nothing even wrong with the quote he used. Like, people were, like, roasting him because it was from Pokemon. But, like, Pokemon just sort of has a lot of good lessons. And even the Pokemon theme song is about, like, going out into a giant, wondrous world and, like, wanting to master something.
Yeah. I will say, on the topic of Pokemon having good lessons, my personal favorite is one of the antagonists of Pokemon Black and White, basically giving an entire speech about how it's worthless to complain about your standing in life, and what you should do is play the hand you were given the best of your ability and become the best version of yourself you can be to make the world better. Even if they do it as, like, a villain thing.
Yeah.
But the Pokemon theme is such a cultural... The Pokemon is such a cultural... icon that Hillary Clinton made the Pokemon Go to the Polls meme when Pokemon Go came out.
Don't remind me about that.
I remember, this is really off topic from the OP, but I remember going out with my sister the day Pokemon Go came out and walking around our neighborhood catching Pidgeys. You know, like, Pokemon is something that means so much to so many people, and I think this OP captures all of it. It captures,
fun anecdote.
Yes.
About the same day.
Yeah.
So Pokemon Go, the beta, like when they were first just letting a couple people at a time in, right?
Yeah.
Came out while I was working summer camp for Boy Scout camp.
Yeah.
And I remember I would take the Boy Scouts on nature hikes to go claim the first version of the gyms for Team Instinct.
which team is that? Which color is that?
The yellow team? I forced all of my students to join Team Instinct.
Listen to me. I just needed you to say that out loud, because Team Instinct's the fucking best.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So I forced all of these kids to join Team Instinct so all of the nature students could, like, hold the gyms, right?
Yes.
And I'll never forget the moment where one of these kids, who, like, basically hasn't talked the entire week, right? As we're going around, and I think at the time, I had the highest CP Pokemon on camp at the time, which was a Venomoth, right?
Yeah.
This is how, like, early Pokemon Go we're talking.
This is, like, some day two shit.
Yeah. So as we're going around just, like, fucking up the other team shit, because, of course, the other program areas have convinced kids to join, like, their teams, right?
Yeah.
This kid just out of nowhere starts belting the Pokemon theme song, and we all join in, and we're just walking around. And the camp director passes us and is like, what the fuck is actually going on?
Oh, hell yeah.
And it was just great. It was just this multi-generational bonding.
Yeah, no, I know so many people who hold Pokemon in a, like, just a really good place in their heart. You know, whether it be friends of mine who are just getting into Pokemon now, like who just got a Switch like a month ago and are playing Pokemon Sword and Shield now, or me who grew up playing like Silver and then eventually got like Diamond and stuff. We played Sword and Shield for like collectively, you, Steve, and I, for like 150 hours in the first 3 weeks, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Pokemon's a big deal. And I love this OP for a lot of reasons, because it feels like the kind of thing where every Pokemon fan can connect to this song. It's got the intensity of seeing that Tentacruel like yeet that building. It's got the joy and wonder of like when they say far and wide, there's this massive like grassy plain and you're seeing them like ride Pokemon, and there's like an Arcanine and a Rapidash and a bunch of Pokemon flying, you know. And it's all about like it says the power that's inside, right? And it means the Pokeball, but like it also means within your heart, you know. And it's all it's another one of those things where it's all about working with others and competing with others, but not in like a way where it's full of malice, but in a way where it's full of love. And the point is for everyone to kind of just have these fun creatures and live this fun fantasy where everyone can be the best version of themselves, which is a message that we at this show can get behind 110% of the time.
And another honorable mention to the Pokemon rap, which is a good rap that American yes. anime has.
If we ever make a Patreon, us performing the Poke Rap will be on there at like a certain goal. I can promise you this. I don't know what that goal will be, but it will be there.
Above that goal will be us performing the perfected version by Brian David Gilbert.
I actually would. I would sit down and do the whole thing. We'd get an audience, dude. We could get our friends to shout all the Pokemon names. We could do it. I'll be Pat, so you have to do all the work. But yeah, I'm willing to assume that almost every person who is giving this podcast a listen has a memory involving Pokemon somehow, because anyone who is willing to listen this far into a podcast episode like this by people like us has experienced Pokemon in their life at some point. And one, I think that's fantastic because I think Pokemon as a whole is really good. And two, I think it's fantastic because it brings people together like that. And I know we haven't really talked about it being like an English language OP or whatever. I don't think there's a more iconic English anime OP than this. I don't think there's a more special English anime OP than this. While I think there may be better English anime OPs than this, this is easily the most important. And other than Yu Yu Hakusho, this one is at the top of my heart and soul in my memory because of what it stands for. To literally possibly tens, if not hundreds of millions of people.
Yeah. And as my closing wholesome thought for the episode, I think one of the things that like, yes, giant marketing ploy to make these songs earworms that you never forget, even for years after your childhood. But goddamn if like these companies and their corporate greed and their marketing myths haven't accidentally created one of the most genuine bonds between strangers in the most smile bomb-esque way, because at some point you can start singing these songs and there's just groups of people that just, they get it, they understand, and they can instantly bring you together. And that's also just the power of anime in general.
Exactly. I was going to say, one of my favorite videos on the internet, and we're getting out of our, like, we're talking about OPs. We're now just talking about wholesome anime shit, as this show tends to end on. One of my favorite images and one of my favorite videos ever is a person playing a piano medley at an anime convention, right? And when they get to, like, the Demon Slayer opening theme song, everyone loses their mind and sings along to all the lyrics. All of these complete strangers are just having the time of their fucking lives being around each other, you know? And I've seen live performances of the Pokemon theme song. Everyone loves this song. It's the same energy as when you see a bunch of people like in the middle of a road at a convention somewhere doing like the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure torture dance or something, you know? It's these moments like that that really make me feel the strength and the love of this community, as annoying as it can be sometimes to be a part of this community. And that's really what I'm here for. And songs like the Pokemon theme song and some of the other goofy picks on our lists today, like have that same energy to me. And that's one of the reasons I value them so much. Cause it feels like some collective mass childhood hallucination that we all remember this shit.
Can I do a humble brag though, right quick?
Oh, fuck yeah.
A flex, as the kids call it.
Yeah. No, yes, you can flex. Then we have to be nice again and then we're done.
Okay. one of the best experiences of my life that I'm sad to say that a lot of people missed out on. Going to the Pokemon Orchestra Symphonic Evolutions tour twice.
That's pretty good. The only flex I got is that I saw, I got to see Star Wars in concert, which was pretty sick.
Nice.
But that's...
Yeah, I got a flex on the anime fans right quick.
Yeah, flex on the anime fans. You got to see the fucking Pokemon Orchestra. Besides the fact that, like, compared to the rest of Pokemon's music, which is all fantastic, the Pokemon theme song still, like, holds its own, and it's just really great. And I love it a lot. And I remember sitting here just a second ago going over what our picks were and needing a fifth one, and then going, oh my god, we can't not end it talking about the Pokemon theme song.
So that's all for me for this morning. Do you have any closing thoughts, Trey?
Thank you to people who make anime. Thank you to people who listen to this show. Thank you to every single musical artist who took place in creating one of these 10 songs or any of the songs that were in our honorable mentions. Thank you to the anime community as a whole for once again, being a place where I was able to figure out that I wanted to do this anime podcast thing, you know? And our special last thank you before I wish all of you a great week and a great weekend and a fantastic time and a wish to see you next Saturday is a personal thank you to a Real Big Fish.
Yeah, shout out Real Big Fish, the homies.
Please come on the show, Real Big Fish. There you go. That's it. End the episode on that. I love you all so much.